Let's talk to the General Manager of Football Operations from the AFL, Mark Evans, joins us. Mark, thanks for your time.
Morning, guys.
Let's talk about it. I suppose the big one was the third man up. That's no longer allowed. Now, just take us through, obviously, the laws of the game. The committee went through it, recommended that to the commission. What were the reasons they recommended banning the third man up, Mark?
Well, let me wind back a little bit. For the last 2 years, we've been looking at it. I think anecdotally, we'd always felt that third man up helped clear some of the congestion and stoppages. When we looked at the statistics, there's no real difference or benefit in the game from either having a third man up or just allowing two rucks to contest. So for every time you see a beautiful clearance from a third man up, you'll see another four or five that where there's a third man up or a fourth man up and the ball does nothing. So really it was no different to just allowing two rucks to have a go at it.
So was that an opinion or was that based on numbers, Mark?
It's based on clearance rates and also then scores from clearances. So you're trying to work out the ability to move the ball from the congestion, which is clearance rate. And then we were trying to overlay that by quality of clearance and does it result in a scoring chain and things like that. And it surprised us, I think, in 2015 when we looked at that and didn't find that. Then it became, particularly in that first part of 2015, had a lot of clumsiness around the officiating of blocking the third man up. And then we've had some injuries and some wear down impact on rucks as well. We think it can clear up a little bit of that for us and also then maybe give us some returning advantage to the bigger, leaping or stronger, tall ruckman.
When you make these decisions, Mark, obviously the rules committee sit down. There's some brainy people and ex-players, et cetera, in there. How much, if any, are the coaches consulted on these matters, Mark?
Well, they were consulted. This was a big discussion point at the recent Laws Summit in Sydney last month. And within Laws Committee and within the coaching ranks, we have opinions both ways. And that's to be expected. Mm. And in the coaching ranks, this was a 50-50 support or not support for this change. And it can, then comes down to, well, if you've got that, then it really is up to the league, the officiating body to
make
come
a call
up with what it thinks is going to be good for the game. So there'll be some naysayers about it. I get that. Rucks, there's about five or six rucks in each list, and there's a lot of midfielders and smaller guys, so I don't think it'll be there's something where we're going to get roundly applauded for, but equally you'll get into the game next year and I don't think it'll be a major concern.
So another alternative would have been to give the ability to block the third man up. Was that considered as well, Mark?
Yeah, it was. I think we looked at it and said, we've got this rule or this interpretation, this management of the game, where we ask the two ruckmen at a stoppage to nominate who they are, and they have to stand a metre away from each other so we prevent that wrestle and scrap. But then anyone can go up for the ruck. So it sort of seems pointless that we say, OK, which two of you are the rucks in this contest? Oh, you and you, stand there. And then third man or fourth man can just come and do whatever they like.
Yeah.
So I think it will clear up a little bit of that. I'm hoping that it will be easier to officiate. I'm hoping that it will help the rucks get less wear and tear, injury and the occasional more catastrophic injury than that, and I'm hoping it preserves the role of the bigger, stronger, taller, leaping ruckman in the game.
A couple of ones over the logistics of this. What happens in the scenario? We know that the umpires like to ball it up really quickly
yep.
And throw it in really quickly to get the game moving, where the ruckman can't get to the contest mark, and there could be two or three midfielders standing around. There's a bit of confusion. A couple go up at the same time. How do you adjudicate that?
It's quite rare that a ball will hit the ground from a ruck contest. It's really quite rare. But occasionally you'll see two rucks at a boundary throw-in and they start so far back and they start a little bit of a wrestle and they don't quite get there. Now, I'm hoping that this will encourage those rucks to start a bit closer to the contest in the first place. If the ruckman, the person on your team sheet who you call ruckman, is not at the stoppage,
yep.
You nominate someone else who is ruck for that stoppage.
So do you have to nominate? Sorry, Mark. Just do you have to nominate? So at the stoppage, the ball goes to half back. The ruckman hasn't got to the contest. The umpire puts it up in the air quickly. Is it a player gives a nudge and a wink to his mate? You go, and only one can go up. Or are you saying, as the umpire is about to put it in the air, you've got to nominate who's going up?
So where it's clear, let's say you've got Sandilands, Goldstein, and they're just there. We don't
don't have to, yep.
The umpire to nominate. They are clearly the two ruckmen. But let's say it was Sandilands is there, and there's no tall player for the opposition, and the nearest player says, "Well, I'm the one that's contesting the ruck on this occasion. He's just going to do whatever he can."
What about under the scenario, the Geelong scenario, where you got Mark Blitzarves, who
he retired yesterday.
He did. That was a funny tweet. Who's also a tall player, and you've got Stanley, for example. Does the umpire actually ask in that scenario which one of you two are actually taking this ruck tap out?
And we do at the moment anyway. And so that's the interesting thing is there. Let's say we say nominate who's the ruck, and Stanley will say, "Yes, I'm the ruck." And he'll get himself a metre away from the opposition ruckman. And then Blixavs can come in and contest the ruck anyway. So we're already asking that, and hopefully it's not too clunky as we try and play that out.
Bit of criticism from players on Twitter yesterday, Mark, from Luke Hodge and from Patrick Dangerfield. What do you say to players who make the argument that why should ruckmen get to ply their trade uninhibited, where you might have other players, midfielders, that can get blocked from, you know, if they're within a certain distance of the ball. Full forwards, obviously, the leading kick goal, so Jason Dunstall, Tony Lockett type full forward, you know, trying to protect that sort of position, you know, that's not the same as it used to be. What do you say to that?
Well, those players won't be saying the same thing at the centre bounce, will they? They'll be saying, no, we've got two rucks in this contest. And can you imagine basketball saying, yeah, third, fourth person up for a tip-off? No problem. I don't think it'll be an issue. Only one in seven or eight stoppages around the ground ends up as a third man up scenario. We don't seem to complain about the other seven, so I think it'll roll through pretty nicely.
Last one on the ruck, because we need to move to the other rules as well. But I'm tipping a guy like Aaron Sandilands and Ross Lyon. They'd be pretty happy this morning, because I think it brings back the big, tall ruckman, and it might affect the recruiting going forward. You're not seeing a lot of ruckmen go in the draft. It's generally the midfielders. So it might bring that back, Mark. Is that was one of the considerations?
Yeah, it is. And surprisingly, Fremantle last year used the tactic, I think the most, certainly to halfway point of the year, used that third man up tactic more than any other team. And I think that was as a response to the fact that Aaron Sandilands, or they didn't have Aaron for a while, but Fremantle quite often get a third man up against them. So they were then sending their own extra man up to the contest as well. So, yeah, I think there'll be some benefits in all of that, and I don't think that's such a bad thing.
A couple of the other interpretation changes, Mark. Take us through high contact. How's that changed?
Well, we've been having a go at this for a couple of years to try and make players who have the ball keep their head high and avoid taking their head into positions where they could end up with an injury. We've had a strong focus for a number of years around indiscriminate tackling. But we've seen a rise in players drawing their own contact to their head for possibly to get a free kick or to evade the tackle. And I think 2 years ago, we might have complicated this a little bit for the umpires and produced a matrix that was asking too much of them in too many different situations, and we're trying to clean that up. The first point of assessment is and always will be whether the tackle has been reasonably applied. You can't just start a tackle high. You can't swing your arm towards someone's head. You can't recklessly, you know, try and make contact really high on the point of the shoulder so that it hits the head. If you do that, it will be a free kick and to protect the ball carrier.
So to simplify a little bit, Mark, you know, and we're talking about, you know, some players, specific players here, Joel Selwood, Paul Pioppolo, players that drop at the knees, players that raise their arm up to try and draw high contact. That's the thing that you're having a look at.
So one of the problems for us in the matrix that we produced was we had too many different scenarios and different outcomes.
Yep.
And now we're trying to say, make it simple. If the tackle has been reasonably applied and then the ball carrier was the person who was responsible for causing the head high contact, just call play on.
Yep.
Now, that still says the tackle has to be reasonable. If both things happen, it'll be a free kick to the person with the ball. But if you hook your arm upwards so that the tackler... his arm,
up,
which started at elbow level, now hits you in the head, then that won't be a free kick for you.
I think that's a really good one, Mark, in particular for young kids, obviously being a father myself. And I'm concerned that a lot of young players, Mark, emulate their heroes. And I don't criticise the heroes for doing it because they're trying to win the free kick. But this rule, I think, tightening it up like this, hopefully will also stop young players of dangerously going into that tactic.
I think that's right. And sometimes players aren't seeking the free kick. They are genuinely seeking to evade, but get a free kick.
Yep.
And we still want to protect that player against tackling technique that's not right. but equally we want to try and get rid of some of these other actions.
And what about the last one, deliberately rush behinds? How's that been tweaked?
It would like to have a stricter interpretation of that, but would also like to provide greater clarity as to about what the amount of pressure or the distance from the goal line will result automatically in a free kick. One of the things that will clean this up a bit, if you've had clear prior opportunity to dispose of the ball and you rush it behind, that will be a free kick all day, every day. And then we're working with clubs across the new year to try and provide greater definition around distance. We may use the top of the goal line and its extension as some sort of a mark to delineate between distance, and we might look at some other measure of pressure as well.
All right, so a couple of tweaks there. Mark, thanks very much for your time, and thanks for your time during the year, mate. Have a great Christmas.
No worries. Cheers.